Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials. Order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's November the 10th, 2023, and this is episode number 10. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Kyle driving and charging the Rolls-Royce Spectre, the debut of Ram 1500 Ram Charger. Rivian is taking orders for its electric delivery van from companies not called Amazon, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Yoni, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the convivial Mr. Tom Malogny, a senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And we also have the mannerly Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hi there, everybody.
Morning.
Good to see you all. All right. So I guess let's get this going and kick it over with Martin for the EV News Daily Weekly Reporting Roundup.
Well, in the news this week, Ram debuted their truck version of the old BMW i3, a series hybrid always propelled by electric motors and a battery slightly under 100 kilowatt hours. So big miles on EV range if you charge it, but also a V6 engine working as a generator, along with the petrol tank and all of the combustion gubbins that'll need servicing. Is it the best of both worlds, or a jack of all trades and master of none? You decide. We'll talk about that a lot on the podcast today. Perhaps a misstep, though, on the marketing lines the CEO was given to say. Tim Kaniskis, the Ram brand CEO, said, with unlimited battery electric range. The Ram 1500 Ram Charger is the pinnacle of light-duty pickup truck segments and the ultimate electric truck. The new Ram Charger is a beast of a light-duty, 633 horsepower, 615 pound-feet of torque, 4 seconds 0 to 60 mph, 14,000 pounds of towing, and zero need for a public charger. Well, it was that that caused so much pushback from the EV community, people pointing out, it's not a perpetual motion machine, it doesn't have unlimited battery range, and if you're so proud of zero need of charging, why did you give it an expensive 400-volt, 145-kilowatt peak charging architecture? Just make it a hybrid like the Nissan e-Power system that doesn't have a plug on the side, if you hate charging so much. So, possibly a great truck, but a big fail on how it was communicated, according to many in the automotive press. We'll hear from our panel of experts later on what they think. Next, BMW positioned themselves as the next-gen EV battery specialists, with batteries anticipated to exceed Tesla's own capabilities. BMW Group's production chief asserts their upcoming EV batteries will set a benchmark that Tesla will have to follow. Newly designed cylindrical cells by 46 millimetres in diameter, either 4695, so 95 is the height in millimetres, 4695s or 46120s, according to the purpose and the car that BMW will put those into from 2025 on their Neue Klasse. Volvo's EX30 has been driven by the automotive press. Embargo lifted a few days ago, and now we can talk about all those first drives that happen and watch those great YouTube videos. The EX30 electric crossover starts at $36,245. US dollars, I'm talking, by the way. $36,245, destination charges included. Pricing starts at $41,850 for the dual motor, and it goes up to $47,895. Single motor, extended range, probably going to be the one you want to get, though. With a 69 kilowatt hour battery, 64 usable, 153 kilowatts peak charging speed on that. No qualification for the IRA tax credit, as the vehicle and battery are not North American sourced, but still coming in at an amazing price. Next, Tesla's lead designer, Franz von Holzhausen, took a pre-production Cybertruck to Malibu Cars and Coffee, and it was matte black wrapped. Now, auto journalist Daniel Golson turned up and took a few close-up pictures, which showed that just a few weeks away from the vehicle going to real customers, the best they can show off is misaligned panels, a hood that doesn't shut, and clearly manufacturing complexity. Sharp angles and flat surfaces, a real production challenge that, well, no one else has taken on apart from Tesla, and they'll have to sort this before November 30th. Lucid is going to use Tesla's charging standard despite the supercharger's low voltage rating. They're kind of hobbling Lucid's 800-900-volt system. Lucid acknowledges that broader access to chargers is a key benefit to the customers, despite many of those being limited to 50 kilowatts because of the onboard process that happens on Lucid's. V4's rolling out at 1,000 volts, actually, at least on the nameplate, would solve all of that. Tesla is upgrading their chargers. Jeep, in their electrified future, was in the news this week. Stellantis outlined their shift towards EVs in an agreement with the UAW. This union agreement seemed to leak online, which said that Jeep's Grand Cherokee EV comes out in 2027, that the all-electric Jeep Wrangler, the J70 as it's known internally, will be 2028. The Jeep Gladiator gets a plug-in by 2025. Belvedere will have a $3.2 billion investment to support EVs. The Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer get updates from 2025 on the STLA platform, and will have a range extender hybrid like the Ram Charger and a Pure EV to follow. And the Ram Rev, the 1500 pure electric truck, begins production next year. Well, finally, I'll talk about Audi launching production of their electric motors for their joint Porsche platform, the PPE, Premium Platform Electric. The motors have now gone into production as of this week at their plant in Hungary, which does mean, of course, we've been waiting for a long time, but those cars should be coming at least in the next 3 to 6 months, so we think we'll see them at least. And Tesla is turning on the V4s in Germany, a big deal, because Germany has quite strict rules on metering and calibration and certification. So either Tesla's taken a flyer, and we'll, you know, seek apology later. I think what's happened here, they've finally got that sorted out, and now our German viewers and listeners can use V4. Loads more news this week. You can catch up on the EV News Daily podcast, but for our roundup here, that's me, Dom. Back to you, Dom.
Oh, yeah. All right. That was great. Thank you, Martin, for that. That was awesome. Right. So let's start maybe with, I guess, Kyle. So you've had a busy week, of as usual, actually. You always have busy weeks. You've driven from Colorado all the way across the country to East Coast to Spartanburg or Greenville, South Carolina, in your Rivian R1T to spend some quality time with some BMWs on the street, on the track. But somehow, besides doing all that, you also managed to snag a couple different Rolls-Royce Spectres and did some filming. So I want to ask, does it drift? But really, I want to know how it charges and drives, and whether you really ate fried chicken from Bojangles inside of it.
Well, we did thorough testing with the $600,000 Rolls-Royce Spectre that we were driving. We took it to Bojangles, Chick-fil-A, and McDonald's, all to make sure it could do the things. You know, at the end of the day, it's important to, I guess, whenever we do a video on a car or test a car, you should always keep the customer in mind, right? So it needs to be somewhat customer representative driving. And with a Rolls Royce, you have to remember, yeah, it's really expensive, but people are still people and they're going to do things that normal people do. So yeah, that's why we had to take it through the drive-thrus, make sure you could do all that. But beyond that, you know, the average use case of the Spectre is going to be a much lower mileage than a typical Tesla Model 3, BMW i5 or i7, something like that. We're really only going to expect to see on average maybe a couple thousand miles a year at the most put on the majority of Spectres. These are cars that some owners will daily drive, yes, and charge at home or charge at their office. Some of them will leave it at their second home and take their Cullinan up to the second home. I mean, the use case is varied. But the car's 420 grand base. You're going to expect to see most optioned in the $500,000 to $600,000 price range. And so, you know, $500,000 to $600,000, the car needs to do everything. So we tested it. And again, for some people, this is pocket change. For some people, it'll be a stretch. You just have to, you know, the price is all relative to the buyer. And there's certainly a buyer for this. Yeah, so I did some efficiency testing. I did some charge testing. And what's interesting is the specs on the car line up pretty closely with the i7, but it's not exactly an i7 battery. They use a higher density cell that can run at warmer temperatures, I'm told. It's 102 kilowatt hour usable. No one knew the gross capacity of the battery pack, but I'm going to guess 115 to 120. You know, the thing's heavy. It's 6,500 pounds. And it has basically the IX motors that are in it, 520 horsepower, more than adequate acceleration, somewhere in the fours is what it feels like. And beyond the numbers, beyond the specs, I guess I'll finish with the charging specs, 205 kilowatt peak charging speeds, very BMW curve where it just kind of sits flat, especially in the mid-range of the battery. We noticed, and I'll have a whole video breaking down the charging curve, but it's about an hour zero to full, which is totally fine, totally acceptable. But most of the time people will charge at home. I just thought it was so funny pulling up to a Sam's Club or Walmart parking lot with the Spectre charging in the middle of the night and all the other people coming around being like, what the heck is this thing? What are you doing here? And we saw so many viewers at the charging station with the Spectre. It was really great. So they were all in the car checking it out. It was really fun. It was really great to see everyone as we did this. Continuing on just really quick, this car will support NACS. So it will have a North American Charging Standard port on it as soon as they're able, and then an adapter coming as soon as they're able to access the supercharger network. But again, most people will charge at home. Now to the magic of the Spectre. Everything I told you now is not class leading. The efficiency was 2.7 miles per kilowatt hour at 70 miles an hour, which is pretty poor. But again, it's got a basic slab on it. It's on 23-inch wheels. Everything here is about excess. It's 266-mile EPA range, which seemed achievable. But the point of this car is not range. It's not charging. It's going to have more than enough for everyone. The point of this car, the magic of the Spectre, was the noise. You hear and feel not a thing. I'm not even joking. I thought the i7 was extremely quiet. And I'm like, right, you can't get any more quiet than an i7, or even an iX is really good. This is genuinely, you cannot tell you're moving unless you put a steering input and you just feel a little move. That's the only way you know. And you can literally do, you know, 90 miles an hour and just whisper to people like this. It's insane. So that's what I really loved about it. Suspension, of course, was unbelievably compliant, well-tuned, active damper, active roll stabilization. Yeah, it's actually built on the Ghost chassis, not the i7 chassis. So it's really well-suited for this. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was under the impression it was going to be built on the i7 chassis. So it doesn't really carry that many things over from the i7?
Electrical architecture, so motors, battery, all that stuff's from existing BMW parts bin. The battery is actually, this is the first time they're using the battery in the Spectre, but it's possible it'll be used in BMW in the future is kind of what I'm feeling. And just absolutely an insane experience.
Tom, do you have some questions for Kyle there?
Not really. I just think it's amazing. It weighs as much as my Lightning. with 100 and, you know, 40 some odd battery pack, you know, kilowatt hour battery pack, a big Lightning. My Lightning weighs 6,600. Some of them weigh less. What did you say? 6,300, 6,400 pounds?
Yeah. I forget the exact, but it's 6,450. It's somewhere around there.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy.
Deliveries have started 3 weeks ago in the US. So they're already out there. So keep an eye on your local Walmart charging station. You might see one roll up. What else was I going to say about it? Yeah, 6,500 pounds, 266 EPA. But yes, I also checked the EPA site, Dom, and could not find anything there. Rolls-Royce was really funny. I was talking to their communications team about this car before I drove it and everything because, you know, it was really cool. They were letting a lot of journalists drive it. But I'm like, we need to drive it, but like we need to like really take this car for the night and do some stuff. And they were like, so what do you want to do with it? I'm like, well, we're just going to charge it. We're going to do efficiency testing. So I'm like, I just need to know motors, battery capacities. And they're like, we don't really know any of this. This is not our world. You know, no one asks. Wow. It's just, you know, it doesn't
they can tell you what
enough.
Type of leather it is and what the stitching is and all that.
Yes. How many stars there are in that ceiling? That ceiling is so awesome, man. Shooting stars? I didn't realize
shooting
that was a
stars,
thing.
That starlight headliner. And they even put it in the doors of the Spectre for the first time. It's the first Rolls-Royce to feature driving assistance. So it will do, it has the BMW lane centering, which is amazing. So same out of the iX and things like that. It also has Android Auto, CarPlay. It has a pretty damn good sound system once you dial it in. And, it's crazy to think that, $420,000 starting price, you'll never see one that cheap. These things are going to be $550 average, which is just crazy. And you know what? They're already sold out for as long as they can. It's the first of many electric Rolls-Royce to come. There will probably be a Black Badge version of this car. There will probably be a drop head version of this car being a convertible. The dimensions are the same as the old Phantom coupe, which is pretty wild. And so it's huge. You drive it on the road, you literally feel like it's the size of a Suburban or Tom's Lightning going down the road. It's massive. And I think all of the weight just went to sound insulation because you don't hear or feel a thing. It's indescribably good. If anyone has the opportunity to drive one, please go drive one.
So I think they only closed the factory for maybe 2 weeks last year. Goodwood's on the south coast where I am. It's not too far away. And I think the only thing they had to do was they realized that once the battery is installed, the sleds they had to move the cars along the production line became too heavy. So they had to get the wheels on the cars earlier for the EV so they could become rollers and they could move them along. But there's been no new factory built. These roll down the same production line at Goodwood as the combustion stuff. They've trained all of their staff to make these and the high voltage parts alongside all the combustion bits. And they'll manage that transition according to how many people want them. As Kyle says, lots of their buyers want them because I love talking about stuff like this because I'm never going to own one, but it's so fascinating to hear about people who this is their eighth car in the garage, in the south of France, and they will nearly always charge it at home. But Rolls-Royce had to make sure it will fast charge and it will go a decent amount of miles, but it'll drive 30 miles around the south of France and come back home again. But fascinating how Rolls-Royce are making this and how they're doing the transition so that each car that comes down the production line at Rolls-Royce is obviously different. Like Dom, you said that headliner inside, but that headliner of all the stars can be anything you want. So if you want it to be the constellation of the sky on the day you were born, well, then, of course, Rolls-Royce will create those little those fiber optics into what the stars look like the day you were born or, a certain memorable day. So every car will be different. There's no base spec, and it's really fascinating to see how they're doing the transition. It's almost the same as the parent company, BMW, who have their thing, the power of choice, and each car that comes down is that, an engine or a battery. Well, if you're making a 3 Series, that's bonkers. If you're making a Rolls-Royce, that makes total sense. So really interesting how it's made as well.
When these things are depreciating in 3 to 5 years, that's going to be the buy.
Oh, yeah?
None of them will have miles.
Now,
I think, Rolls-Royces in general hold their value extremely well. But we don't know what the electric thing is going to do. There's certainly a subset of Rolls-Royce buyer that's like, don't bring this thing near me. But then there's also a ton of buyers that are so into it. And even talking to some of the Rolls-Royce folks that were here at this event, they're like, a surprisingly high number of them are putting DC chargers in at home, doing electrical service upgrades. And I'm like, why would they ever do that? And they're like, well, these people just love them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have to ask you, so you spent a lot of time in the BMW i7. That's an expensive car. How does this compare in terms of being next level?
It's incomparable. I mean, they are in totally different classes of vehicles. There's, when you're in the Spectre, it is a entirely different experience from the i7. It's way softer, it's way quieter, it's way more plush, it's way more finely tuned. And I thought we were at the peak with the i7. And then boom, Rolls-Royce just, you know, absolutely blowing everything out of the water from a comfort perspective. If you want the most comfortable experience, get a Spectre. You'll live a much better life. And so, that's the way to do it. Just buy a Spectre. You'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, get two of them, Kyle. You know, his and hers.
Some people have. Some
no, people I know. Like, I know. That's the crazy thing.
What color? Let me get two or three of them.
That's the crazy thing. You know, the interesting thing is, Uber luxury cars like Rolls-Royce, Bentley, and so forth, they spent millions trying to make their combustion vehicles as quiet and as serene of an experience as they can. You know, tons of money on you know, they don't need the roar of the engine like some people that have sports cars like to really get that audible feedback. They've been trying to get the cars quieter and quieter and do a pretty good job of it. My uncle has a Bentley and it's pretty damn quiet in that thing when I'm driving it. But with the EVs, it just gave them the perfect opportunity to just do as Kyle said and just make it like dead quiet, you know, like one of those rooms that you go in and you can only stay in there for 15 minutes and you go crazy and you run out. So it probably feels like that in there. So
yeah, I actually noticed I was getting slightly nauseous before we even started moving because there's no sound. It's a really crazy experience.
So put the radio on as soon as you get in the car is what you're saying.
Yeah, we did that. We like blasted some music. It was great. We tried a whole bunch of different experiments with this car. The video is going to be really long, as you can imagine, and it's certainly going to be more for entertainment. But you will be surprised. We do have some viewers of this podcast, but also a few, at least three or four on Out of Spec that have deposits in for their Spectres. So it's not like it's going out into the orb that we do have viewers with, you know, this kind of purchasing power in this market. So it's, you know, we got to test everything. And some days at the office are better than others.
So you tested everything. I have to ask you, did you do the Grey Poupon test?
We did try and go find some Grey Poupon.
Oh, you didn't succeed. That would have been the best. If you had on video rolling up to someone in a traffic light, you know, saying, do you need some Grey Poupon and hanging it out the window? Oh, you let me down. Now I'm not going to watch the video.
Yeah,
if it doesn't have Grey Poupon, it's not worth it.
Well, and also, like, there's no need to watch the video because we said it all here in this podcast. But you'll at least see everything. I want to watch the video.
So when does the video come up? Because I actually do want to watch it.
Yeah, I haven't edited it yet, but right after this show, I'm going to do that.
Okay, so probably tomorrow at the latest, then probably.
I don't like timelines. I'd like to get it up today.
Fine. So.
I'd like to get it up today.
Here's a good question. Urban Strinken asks, how does it compare to Cadillac Celestique, which you haven't driven yet?
No.
But, I mean, that's going to be like a comparison, just to keep in mind as we go forward, because I have I think you will have a chance to drive the Celestique, excuse me. I want to call it Celestique.
But I'm definitely going to try and drive one of those. It's half the price of the Spectre.
Oh, is it really that much difference? Okay.
I think Celestique is 340.
Right.
And this is, you know, 600 for an average build.
Right. I mean, while the Celestique's going to go up, there's all going to be like a wholly bespoke cars as well. So I think those prices are going to go. I don't think you're not going to be able to find a $300,000 Celestique. They're going to be at least four, I think.
That's a great comparison test. Real consumer advice we'll provide with that one.
Right. Hey, so you also got to drive some other cars there besides the Spectre, the i4. I saw you had a little clip of that on the track. Have you driven the i4 on the track before?
Yeah, I have. I've driven i4 pretty spicily before. But so basically, maybe this event is called BMW Test Fest, and it's where they bring some journalists from, you know, around the country to the BMW Performance Center in Greer, South Carolina. And they're like, here's one of everything or multiple of everything. I think they have 100 cars. And they say, go do whatever you want.
I did see that you're on the driving the i4 on the track, chasing out another BMW. You did hit some derating from the motors getting hot.
Yeah,
battery
in all of the electric cars. So let me explain how the track component went yesterday. Best day at the office ever, because you guys know I'm a performance driving enthusiast. This is my favorite thing in the world, is to go fast, to go sideways, to get cars into crazy situations, and, you know, enjoy, you know, the chassis engineers, basically their work. And so they have a great test track here in South Carolina. You can really do some stupid things on this track. It's wonderful. And that's basically what they let us do. You know, most events that we go to, especially with automakers, they're like, ah, well, you know, save the tires, do all these things, like put an instructor in the car. And, you know, this event was just like, here are the keys, go have fun. And then they figured out like who was fast, who wasn't, who needed some instruction. And it was great because we just had the track to ourselves. We could jump in all the cars and just head out. And, you know, they did not care if we were full sideways, you know, just roasting tires. It was wonderful. So they had a selection of combustion vehicles, of course, their sports cars, their new BMW M2, their M3 CSs, which are really special and kind of cool. But of course, I'll talk about those on my personal channel. But they also had the BMW i5 as an official track vehicle that you could take out. So they were using i5 M60s. And that was a real surprise. Yes, the thermal limitations that I experienced in Portugal with the i5 were here and present. And so that is a real thing where BMWs, if you rip on them hard for even one or two laps, they fall on their face. They recover very quickly, which makes me think it's inverter temperature more than battery temperature. But I know I had it with the iX M60 in Germany last week. So if there's one thing I really want BMW to work on with their battery electric cars, it's their thermal management under performance driving scenarios. You put an M badge on the car, it needs to be driven fast. You know, it's 2023. These should have been problems from 10 years ago that are solved by now, especially for a brand centered around performance. That aside, the braking feel, the chassis engineering, the steering, the way you can, you know, use the car's weight to its advantage was amazing. The i5 around this track, I was kind of showing some of the instructors because obviously they have extreme knowledge of the facility and they're amazing drivers. And then I have a lot of the EV nerd stuff. And so I was taking them for some laps in the i5, showing them, you know, different ways you can drive the car and how you have to, you know, stay in the throttle, show the car what it wants to do from a drivetrain split standpoint. And we basically were doing just full drifting laps in the i5, which they had not seen before. So it was really cool to show them what that car can really do. And, you know, if you drive it sensibly, it's well-tuned, it's well-calibrated. That car is, I think, the best BMW right now, the new i5 M60. If you just want a car that kind of does everything, I still love the iX, but wow, that car is comfortable. It's very good in the corners, and it's really a wonderful machine. So I loved that thing. I then was just, you know, they had all those cars available for track use. And I found the guy who, a friend of mine who runs the BMW press fleet. I'm like, can I just take the i4 that's parked for street drives for a few laps? And they're like, just save the tires. And I was like, that never happens. He's like, okay, just take it anyway. So I took the i4 M50 out for some laps. And that was a disappointment. That was actually a disappointment. Okay. And the i5 is way better than the i4. The i4 actually seemed to have a bit better thermal longevity. It had great brake feel, but the chassis was not so good. And it kept turning ESP back on. It wouldn't stay off.
It's heavy too, the i4, right? I think it's like 500 pounds heavier than the Model 3 or something.
It just doesn't feel right. Like the i5 is a car that was designed to be battery electric and combustion. And you can tell that feels like a battery electric car when you drive it. It's controllable. It was tuned for this. It was great. The i4 feels like someone stuck a battery in a car that wasn't supposed to have a battery. And it drives like that on track. It was super bouncy and big body oscillations and just huge power limitations. It won't give you power if you have steering lock on the wheel at all. So you have to unwind the wheel for it to give you full power. So you basically get the corner done as soon as possible and try and get straight lock on the wheel, and then it gives you power. It's super unnatural. And, you know, that's one of those cars I noticed and noted all of this when I compared the Model 3 performance to the i4 on a canyon road. But on track, I was just like, oh boy, this needs serious updates for this use case. Now, our viewers, we have many viewers who own i5. I still recommend the car. And no one's complaining about this. It's just, again, you put an M badge on a car, it's got to do M stuff. It can't just have the appearance of doing M things. So that was a disappointment. But I have to say the i5 was really a standout vehicle. And actually, I was talking to the instructors. They all agreed i5, M50. They're like, we don't know what the heck they did with this thing because it's not good out here. But i4 eDrive 40, the rear wheel drive one, they're like, that's a balanced old 3 Series. You can hang the tail out. And that car's just tuned way better, even though it's just the rear wheel drive version. So Doug, who owns a i4 eDrive 40, actually, I did not have the chance to drive that one on track, but the instructor said that's their pick in the i4 lineup. So, yeah, very cool to see that. Yeah, so anyway, yesterday was just the best day ever. We were doing full skids and M2s around a wet skid pad. And, I met one of the guys who holds the world's longest drift where they refueled the M5's mid-skid. So cool. And, so he and I were out. I think his name is Matt Mullins. We were just out for like hours just doing laps together. It was so fun.
I saw on Twitter you had one clip of on the skid pad where you're just driving. I think it was in a gas car actually, but you're just like circle sideways. And
yeah, we have a lot of clips of that. And then if you go to my Instagram story, you'll see some of the hot laps I was giving in M3 CSs and the M2s on the skid pad. There's more stuff on there as well, but that's combustion world. It's I got to tell you, BMW builds some incredible performance cars. They always have. So, that's basically what we did. You just get yourself maximum slip angle and then you just control it. It's really, really fun. Yes.
We're watching a bit of that clip on our live video feed here. It looks like everyone's having a good time.
Yeah, it did make a couple people throw up though. So.
Ooh. Awesome. I mean,
actually, if you don't control like where you're looking, you can get pretty nauseous pretty quickly out there. So really, really important to keep your eyes up.
Interesting. All right. I guess let's move on. Before we get onto the next thing, I wanted John Check had a note back here earlier, and he donated us $5, which thank you very much. Could you bring up the picture again where who's not going to NAC yet? So this week, actually, Lucid announced that they're going to the North American Charging Standard. That's the Tesla plug, for one. I'm not sure. Do you have that handy there, Martin? I see you.
Oh, do I looking. Have it handy? If you give me about 15 seconds, I can find it.
Okay. And so while you're doing that, I'll also mention this comment. Dylan Womack also generously donated $4.99. Do y'all have a Patreon or monthly membership on a social media platform? I would love to contribute on a regular basis, even if there's no perks. I think we're talking about that internally here, and we should try to have something up real soon, either through Facebook or through YouTube or Patreon.
Thanks for mentioning that, though, and thanks for contributing, everyone. We appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I will find it. Yes, before the end of the show, I will find
it. Okay, we'll get to that then. Before we move on, really quick, Kyle, you also stopped at a cool charging station on your way to Spartanburg in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's called Franklin's Charging. It had a solar canopy, a couple of ChargePoint CPE250s, and a big free wire unit. It was interesting that you made it like a 45-minute video of this place, talking with the owner and learning all about it and their other location at Hot Springs, Arkansas. Now, I encourage people to go to the Out of Spec Reviews channel to check it out. But Kyle, I was wondering if you could tell us about his path to profitability, if you could. You can tell he invested like a good bit of coin in this location. Did it seem like it's going to pay off at some point?
Hard to say. We didn't get into the exact numbers, but it's possible we'll do that in the near future with him. He seems to think there is a way to make it profitable if he dispenses, I think, roughly 1 megawatt hour per day is his goal. And right now, I don't think he's hit 1 megawatt hour per day dispensing in Little Rock, Arkansas. But basically, this is a boutique DC fast charging hub. He is playing around with different units, different business models, solar, having vertical farming integrated and art studio integrated on the property as well. It's really a holistic approach to what happens for charging and other small businesses that can all, coincide together. So thought it was really fantastic, really amazing. And here's my dad in the comments, actually. Hey, Dad, good morning. My dad just picked up his new car, actually. Maybe we can mention that really quick. And so he's been enjoying that. He got a Model X from Tesla, and it's a beautiful car. I think he'll have plenty of videos on the Out of Spec Dave channel, so keep an eye out on that one. And he's really thrilled, I think, with his X.
Oh, yeah?
Cool car. I'm going to steal it.
I did see him on Twitter, the thumbnail for a video. I think he's picking it up, possibly, or having it delivered, the delivery video.
Yeah, he picked it up at the Tesla service center.
Right. Mm-hmm. In Florida or up in north?
In New York he got it. So, okay. The whole video is there just through the process and, why he went for this particular car over others. So, yeah, that's really the thing. Also want to say a huge thanks to Gary for the super chat. Of course, all the donations to this podcast go right back into the show. And so it allows us to do some cool things, potentially getting everyone together for a meetup and some other things like that. So we appreciate the donations, of course. The other topic I just wanted to bring up really quick, sort of tangentially to that Little Rock spot, sure. Was yeah. I drove my Rivian from Colorado to here in South Carolina.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was awesome, which I know none of you were expecting me to say. The trip went smoothly. That's not to say I didn't have 100% perfect charging, but if every trip could go as well as this one did, I don't think we would have seen a switch to NACS, and I don't think you would have seen as many people complaining as they do. Certainly we met other people along the journey that were like, this is the worst I've ever seen it in years. And they were having a rough time. I met a guy with an ID4 who is on his third trip from Canada to Texas and back. He's done it every 6 months with this car. And he's like, I was stranded. I had to get towed. This was awful. Meanwhile, I'm on a different trip at the same time having the best experience I've ever had with the charging network. So a lot of it depends on the route. A lot of it depends on some planning. For example, Hayes, Kansas just went offline today, which means on I-70, if you don't have a long range car, you cannot travel on I-70 in an EV unless it's a Tesla, which is a real disaster. And it apparently was just pulled offline. So I'm not saying it's all perfect. What I am saying is my experience driving the Rivian to here, I was able to get great power at many different charging providers, Electrify America, ChargePoint, as well as using a free wire station, and also level 2 charging at hotels. And it was great. It was really awesome. I have a whole video coming on that one. Now on the return, we'll see how that goes. But I'm actually leaving my truck out here for some time on the East Coast, and then I'm going to LA. So there you go. Really fun stuff.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Dave. Chitter Kung Pao.
This is my friend Dave with the yellow I-4. So awesome. Huge thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Wow.
Don't interrupt the show for me, but we're interrupting the show for you.
Well, we have to. Last week, Dominic and I were saying we need something that happens when someone does a super chat, and we couldn't work it out. But what we were saying is we need like a thing, but not this thing. So, like, we need a thing which isn't this thing, by the way, because this is terrible. But we made a thing to illustrate a proof of concept. So, for you, sir, this is the only time you will see this terrible graphic on screen. Thank you for your super chat.
8-bit confetti. All right.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so I was just wondering, too, did you hit any EVgo chargers?
Yep. I think two, one in Nashville, another one, like, again, it wasn't all perfect. The one EVgo charger that we hit that I remember was at a really sketchy location in the middle of the night. And we're like, we're going to charge up just enough to get out of here. And there was a woman in a C40 in front of us. She's like, well, I got to get the heck out of here. So it's not all perfect, but, it was really, really good. Good charging experience across multiple providers. I only had one major issue, which was limited to 40 kilowatts at a particular station, but I just moved the truck and then I got full power on another one. I mean, that if that's the worst, we really shouldn't complain.
Right.
Well, I wish we could say that this is an indication of things improving, but I think it just got lucky.
It's very possible. Yeah. It's very possible.
Yeah. But plus you planned it also. As you said, you know, you probably took a look at where you were going and you didn't pull into stations that, you know, the last six check-ins said, don't come here. It doesn't work. You know, it's the, if you do a little bit of research, you're going to, on your route, if you're taking a long trip, you're going to probably eliminate a lot of potential problems, but you can't eliminate everything.
I don't think you drove anything new this week, but I understand you're putting out a video today recapping your first 15,000 miles as a Ford F-150 Lightning owner. And again, I encourage you all to go ahead and watch that when it comes out. It should be coming out this morning, I believe. You can tell us if I'm wrong. Maybe you can give us some of the highlights and lowlights real quick.
Yeah. So it's actually going to go live right after this podcast. I think I have it set around 11:10 or 11:15 or something. So if you guys finish this podcast and have nothing else to do, just jump head over there and it's going to be going live. I had meant to do a 1 year review. Me being me, I'm always backed up. So I took possession of it in early July of last year. So it's actually turned out to be a 16-month review. And I had been averaging 1,000 miles a month. So I was right on target for like 12,000 miles in July. I'm falling behind a little bit because now I have the Bolt and I've been using that to tool around locally a lot. So I have 15,000 miles in 16 months. And I thought I'd go over some of the things that I really like about the vehicle and also talk about some of the shortcomings and things I wish Ford would improve upon. I mean, you guys, for those that follow the Batteries Included podcast, you know, I'm super happy with my Lightning. I really love it. It's one of, if not my favorite electric vehicle that I've owned. I absolutely think it's, you know, better than what I expected it was going to be. So no surprises there, but there's obviously things that bother me about it. A lot of it's related to the electronics and the, you know, without giving away the video, just talk about things like my Android Auto very frequently doesn't connect when I get in the vehicle and I have to either plug it in or manually go and connect it. That's really annoying. The phone as a key works to unlock the vehicle, but it doesn't do walk away. So it's almost like, why have it? If it's not going to unlock it and lock it, don't even send it out yet. And Ford pushed that out as an over-the-air update last year, and they said they were going to follow up with the walkaway pretty soon. But, I mean, it's been like 6 or 7 months, I think, at this point, and walkaway still doesn't work. And so that's really annoying. And then a bunch of small little things, nothing really major. The DC fast charging, I talked about that. It could be better. I find it to be just acceptable, just at the edge of, you know, it doesn't cause me to complain and say, oh, this is, you know, Ford's got to do better than this. It takes about 40 minutes to get it from 15% to 80%. It's a big battery. I'd like to see that in 30 minutes, but for me and my use case, it works because I don't do that many long road trips. And if it means an extra 10 minutes, it doesn't really bother me. But I can understand if you had this truck and you were doing frequent road trips, it could get annoying. But, you know, if you bought a pickup truck, if you need a pickup truck and you frequently need to drive very long distances, maybe you got the wrong truck, you know, as particularly if you need to tow long distances, it can physically do it. But being able to do it and being convenient at doing it is another thing when you talk about the lack of infrastructure, the lack of pull-through charging stations. So that's why I guess we're going to talk about the Ram Charger next, about the plug-in hybrid. We'll see if that makes sense or not. But overall, honestly, you know, to sum it all up, if you don't want to watch the video, I'm, you know, still love the Lightning. I think Ford did a really great job with it. They could do better at more frequent over-the-air updates. They could do some charging information. You get no charging information in the vehicle. And that drives me nuts that I can't look in the vehicle and see volts and amps and kilowatt hour draw and all that stuff. You get none of that. The app sucks, you know, but overall, the truck itself, I'm super happy with. And yeah, that video will be coming out in about an hour.
Martin, I wanted to talk to you about your appearance on the Out of Spec podcast this week, but we only have Tom for like an hour. So I want to get into the news for a bit and maybe we can come back to you after for that.
There's, go and watch the Out of Spec podcast. Nothing to say about this. But yeah, I joined Francie for what was going to be a quick 20 minutes. And so I channeled my true Out of Spec and we did 45 minutes. It was good fun to talk about the European market versus the US market, where in the US Tesla's 50%. Over here, it's about 12, 13%. And the cars that we get that the US doesn't. So go and watch that. Nothing else to say, really.
Right.
And so, also, Francie, I just got a text from her. She's grabbing Starbucks and she's on her way. So she'll join the show as Tom leaves. Sweet.
Yay.
That perfect. That's perfect. That's right.
So, Dom, let me grab this question from David. Tom, any comment on reliability? I do talk about that in the video. I've had no problems whatsoever. There's a couple recalls going out there. One, the light bar, the tail light bar is getting condensation on some vehicles. I keep checking mine. There's no condensation in mine. No other issues. I haven't had any problems with the truck whatsoever. So, the intelligent backup power that I have, mine works great. Did have a problem that Ford had to fix it. But it was a quick, easy, they knew exactly what was wrong with it. And it was actually in Ford Charge Station Pro over here was the problem. There was a module in there that wasn't connecting to the vehicle. It would charge the vehicle, but it wasn't working with the Ford Charge Station Pro. And Ford knew exactly what the problem was because it had originally worked when I hooked it up. So like, okay, we know everything is working. And if this isn't connecting, the module in the Ford Charge Station Pro doesn't work. So they sent somebody out to monitor with my electrician. Q-Merit does all my electric work here. They came, opened it up, and they knew exactly what was going on with it. And that's when, and we talked about this before, we realized that the connections inside Ford Charge Station Pro was starting to back out. And we torqued them to the specifications, which, you know, as if you guys watch any of my videos, I harp on torquing all the connections to what the manufacturer specs are. Don't just crank on it. That's why Tesla in their charger actually has it listed inside the box to torque the torque requirements. They print it on the plastic, which is pretty nice. Pretty cool. So it's right in your face when you're tightening it. You can't not see it. So, and then Ford actually, based on feedback they're getting from their electricians and customers, they've upped the torque level for Ford Charge Station Pro. So if any of the followers out there have one that they've had like a year ago, you're probably, and you haven't increased it, if your electrician hasn't come back out and done that, you need to open it up and shut the power off and everything and get a torque wrench on there and crank them. I think it used to be 50 pound inch and now it's 80. But there's definitely literature that you could find on that. And I talk about it in one of my videos, but this is a problem with all electric vehicle charging equipment. The higher the power, the more of a chance you're going to see these connections start backing out. And that's why you have to have an electrician do it that knows what he's doing and knows how important the torque is. And even when you do it right, like we did, you could have a problem. So, there's a lot to talk about this in the coming years.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And just before we get into the news, I just wanted to say that we have a little bit of a celebrity in our comments. Kyle, I am coming for your cannonball record as slow as possible. So Power of Light, this is a gentleman. We haven't talked to him yet, I don't think, but he is crossing the country, doing a cannonball, starting at the Red Ball Garage, going across in a Tesla Model Y, but powered solely by solar.
That is amazing. Why is this the first I'm hearing about it?
He's got a whole array of like flexible panels in his back of his Model Y, and he's like setting them up when he's stopping and like spending the day charging, you know, from like the solar thing that he's carrying around with him. It's like kind of cool. Yeah, you should have him. Francie, I think, should do a little podcast on Out of Spec with him.
Well, he'll have time to chat. So looking forward to this.
Yeah. All right, so I just want to mention that because I saw him in our comments and stuff.
Well,
and
maybe I can meet up with him in a couple weeks. I don't know how long it's going to take him. But
he's in Amarillo, I believe, he's saying.
Oh, wow, so he's made some distance. Okay.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. Yeah, but you're headed to L.A., aren't you?
Soon? Yeah, well, I'm flying to L.A., and then I'm coming back here and then driving back to Colorado. So, wow, that's a lot of solar panels. Holy
smokes.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. It's, oh, my God. It's like you need a whole lot, though, you know?
This is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Oh, why am I just hearing about this now? All right, so I'm gonna get in touch with this guy. We got to make a bunch of videos. This is amazing.
Okay, right on. So I guess let's talk about some news. So the big product news of the week this week has to be the debut of the 2025 Ram 1500 Ram Charger. Now, to be clear, the Ram Charger is not a pure all-electric vehicle. It's a plug-in series hybrid. And some in the audience may think it disqualifies that for discussion, but apologies to you because we're going to talk about it, at least for a bit. So one of the reasons I think it's worth talking about is because it has a huge battery for a plug-in hybrid. Ram says it's 92 kilowatt hours, but Car and Driver says that's the gross capacity, while its usable capacity is 70.8 kilowatt hours. So if that's correct, it has a huge buffer in it, which kind of makes sense because it needs that as a plug-in hybrid vehicle. When the battery is usually discharged, it still needs the generator can't put out enough power from the motor can't share all the power of the truck. And we'll get into that in a second. I'll give you some numbers here. You see what I'm talking about. So all electric range is 145 miles on that 70.8 kilowatt hours. So the other reason it's important is that this vehicle will be competing against electric trucks from Ford, General Motors, and likely its own all-electric pickup, the Ram Rev, and it's likely going to be driving like most of its miles on electricity. So let me give you a few quick numbers to get this going. So front motor is 250 kilowatts, that's 335 horsepower. Rear motor is 238 kilowatts, slightly less power there, 319 horsepower, and they are powered by that 92 kilowatt hour battery and a 130 kilowatt or 174 horsepower generator that's bolted to a 3.6 liter Pentastar V6. So altogether, the truck can put out 663 horsepower and 615 pound-feet of torque. And its overall range is given as 690 miles. That's with the battery and the gas tank. 0 to 60 is said to be 4.4 seconds. It's rated tow up to 14,000 pounds and has a maximum payload of 2,625 pounds, which is pretty decent, I think, for a truck that's going to be pretty heavy. Peak DC charging power is said to be 145 kilowatts. Ram doesn't give a 10 to 80% charge time. Instead, they just say it can add 50 miles in 10 minutes. So, Tom, you're a truck guy. Who is Ram aiming this truck at? And what are your general impressions of it overall?
So, a lot to unpack. I like to offer vehicles in all shapes and sizes. First of all, I think there's going to be people that are going to really appreciate this vehicle. It's not for me, but I don't have a use case that needs it. This is really like the Volt. It's a serial hybrid. It's an extended range electric vehicle. It's like the BMW i3 Rex. So I don't know if it's a Rex or an EREV, but we can just call these vehicles plug-in hybrids and then have different subcategories if you want. But, right. I personally, what I think is going to happen, I think a lot of people are going to buy it and then be posting about how they never buy gas. That's what I noticed with Volt owners. So many Volt owners bought it and then I've got 28,000 miles and I've only gotten gas twice. And then I would look at them and say, well, you bought the wrong car. And they look at me like, what do you mean? I said, well, you didn't need a plug-in hybrid. You could have went full EV. If you're telling me you drove 25,000 miles on a car that can go 40 miles of range and 95% on battery, you didn't need it, but I understand some people feel like they, want that security of having it there. And some people do need it. There are some use cases, businesses in particular, that need to tow really long distances that a fully electric vehicle right now just can't do it. But I would, I might almost convince them to just buy a gas car then, rather than this. But we should almost do a whole podcast talking about this. One of the things I noticed when I saw this was I was concerned that it was going to have the problem that the i3 had, where if you're towing 12,000 pounds and you're going up a long mountain range, that buffer, and they were talking about having a 16% battery buffer left when the range extender kicks on. And I was doing the math and I said, that's not going to work. It won't. It'll run out as you're going up like the Rex did and go into limp mode. But then I read when you put it in tow mode, it reserves 35% of the battery.
Oh,
so now, right. So now you've got, you know, I don't even know how many, so it is 22-23 kilowatt hour in the lower end buffer. And now this thing's pumping, I think 175 horsepower and charging it. So you could still run it out. I mean, if Kyle put a trailer on this thing and took it up mountain passes and put 14,000 pounds on that trailer, whatever, did the maximum, I think it'll run out if you use the extreme case and it'll go into limp mode. But that it's such a small case, I don't think people are going to do that. You'd have to intentionally do it, which a lot of people did with the i3 just to like make a video of it running out and journalists showing it on the side of the road, you know, in limp mode. But, you know, I think it's going to work for a lot of people. I do think it's going to be attractive for some people because there's so many people that want to possibly go into electrification, but are concerned about range and towing with pickup trucks. To me, one of the beautiful things about businesses using electric vehicles, besides the emissions and that stuff, is the low operating cost. And with this, you're not going to really get that. It's going to be some saving, but really not much. And you know, when you're publicly driving on for public infrastructure, it almost would be cheaper to buy gas in some instances for it. So, you know, for me, this is not a vehicle. I wouldn't be interested in something like this. I think fleet managers really have to look at the total cost, the running cost, to decide if this makes sense or not. The electric vehicles make sense with fleets if the use case can fit. If what the business needs the truck to do, the EV truck will absolutely end up, you'll be above water. It'll take you a few years, even if you paid an extra $10,000 or whatever it is for the vehicle. You're going to save money with brakes, with refueling, with not having pretty much any maintenance to deal with. But now this, you need a lot of regular maintenance as well as, you know, all the stuff. It's, you know, people talk about these plug-in hybrids being neither fish nor fowl. That's what I kind of, that's my personal opinion of them. But with all that said, I think it makes sense for a lot of people. I'm glad Dodge put something like this out. And I know some businesses this will make a lot of sense for. I just don't know what that percentage is. Certainly middle America and, you know, where there's not good charging infrastructure, people that need to tow a lot frequently. But then I don't know, should those people just go for a combustion truck and save their money? Because this has got to cost more. You've got two powertrains. You've got a big 90 kilowatt hour battery packs is going to add a lot of cost to this. So I don't know. I'm glad they put it out. It's not for me. That's I guess my bottom line.
Right. Yeah. I see it as a really for commercial towing is kind of the use case I see for it, because I don't know, Kyle, how much do you think this thing's going to cost?
A lot, but I love it. I'm surprised you guys aren't as into it as I am.
No, I mean, that's Tom. I haven't heard my thoughts about it, but
okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's hear your thoughts, Tom.
I mean, I'm really an all electric guy, but, and I understand the use case for this. I mean, this really opens up, you know, towing, like commercial applications for this, and there it will end up, besides being driving on, you know, electricity for a good amount of the time, each of these trucks, when it does burn fuel, I suspect it's going to have a really decent fuel mileage rating. There's no transmission, there's no drive shaft, it's all, you know, fed through the motor, so it's the motor is running at its kind of peak efficient range, feeds the battery directly. It doesn't feed the motors and the battery, it goes right into the battery. So for certain applications I think it's going to be super great, but I'm not sure how, I don't know, it'll see how big a chunk that there is of that market for it, because yeah, or how it competes with other like or heavy duty trucks as well. I mean, 14,000 pounds, I think what's a 2,500 heavy duty pickup truck pull, like 28,000 pounds? You know, off the top of your head,
Kyle? So, I mean, you can tow up to 27,000 pounds now with like a normal F-350 dually or something crazy. So, yeah.
Right. Right, right. So this is kind of in there. Some, it's not quite up to that level. So it's, you know, in the middle ground.
It's still a light duty truck. I mean, it's an F-150 competitor. It's not meant to do heavy duty work, in my opinion.
Right. But I think if you have a business and you're putting a lot of miles on your vehicles, I think this will save you money over the long run. But for most buyers, like retail buyers, I think it's going to be too expensive.
So I think the other way around. I'm not sure I see the business case for this at all because it's going to be extremely expensive up front, and you still have to factor in maintenance and fuel. So your TCO goes through the roof with this thing. The thing that I like about it is a bit of like the early i3 range extended situation, which was that's a battery electric vehicle. You get an EV driving experience. You get all the benefits of an EV with fast charging. You can drive it as an electric car. But you have the little scooter motor in that, and in this case, a Pentastar V6, which is, I think, crazy. But, you know, whatever. I like excess. So big batteries, big motors, sign me up. And now you can drive it as a truck, and you don't have to worry about it. So, you know, 90% of the time, this will be driven as an EV around town. For me, a trip from Fort Collins to Denver, I could easily do electric. But as soon as I throw a trailer on this thing, which I tow a lot, especially in rough terrain in Colorado, this is like built for me. I need a combustion engine. I'm kind of tired of towing with electric. And so this is really a great solution. Now the battery's huge. The engine seems to output really good, consistent power. They definitely do not want the stories of these things on the side of the road. I think Tom's saying we could run it out in the mountains. I'm not sure we can. I think it would be really interesting. I mean, the hill climbs are only a few miles long, and then you're on a downhill recharging. So even if you go wide open up the entire hill climb, I'm not sure you could burn the battery out. Either way, what I'm saying is I think this is going to be a huge incentive to get truck owners, to get people who want to drive electric but actually can't because an EV isn't capable enough today, into an EV with this range extender to kick on occasionally, and the price will be astronomical, just like i3 range extenders were extremely astronomical and eventually will go away. But this is what I've been asking for months and years. I wanted a van, a range extended van, range extended trucks. This is what we need for today's market and today's tech.
So I have to take off, guys, but before I leave, I'm just going to add one more comment about this. And I'm not saying it's not going to work and people will like it. I think they will. It's not for my use case. Everybody has different use cases. Kyle has a very different use case than I do. But here's the deal breaker for me. No frunk. Oh. The best thing about my Lightning is that damn frunk. I use it all the time. I absolutely love it. And you lose that for this. It's huge storage space that's secure. Tools go in there. You don't have to put a box in the back of the truck. And that to me is a killer. It sounds stupid, but if I didn't have the frunk on the Lightning, it would be such my ownership experience would not be nearly as good as it is. I just love that thing. I used it this morning. I was at Home Depot at like 5:45 this morning, and I filled up the trunk, the frunk with 12 bags of sand and some connections and stuff. I'm doing a project next to my house. And I just absolutely love it. I love that I didn't have to go into the bed and climb into the bed and load the stuff and then bend my back getting that sand out. I just put it all up in the front. I probably overloaded it. The truck was tilted down. But like that to me is just the best. So anyway, guys, I have to take off. I have some things going on at the house that I'm working on. Have a good week. I'll catch you next week.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
That's a great visual. Usually when you load up your truck, it's sitting like this way. You get in, you're looking at the sky. But in Tom, when Tom does it, you know, it's like the other way around.
The truck is stuck in the panic stop situation all the time in Tom's truck.
Right. The opposite of Carolina squat.
That's right.
We need to come up with a name for that. So the range on this thing when it's I believe with the gas engine and everything and the electric thing is like maybe 300 miles when towing, I think is a number that I saw thrown out there. I'm not sure, you know, how, I mean, that's going to change depending on what you're pulling, you know, the less aerodynamic, the fewer miles you're going to get towing. But so the competition.
So you get three times the mileage. Three times the mileage as you get in a battery electric truck.
Three times or double? Because I'm thinking 300. So if you have like the Silverado EV, which has a 200 kilowatt hour pack ish, that should get 200 miles towing. If it's not too
right.
crazy.
Sure, that's fair. I'm thinking comparing it to, you can't buy a Silverado right now. I guess you can't buy this either. But I'm thinking of this versus a Rivian or a Lightning. Those are 100-mile real world. And keep in mind, the chargers aren't spaced 100 miles apart. So you're always getting 70 miles, 60 miles, sometimes 40 miles on a charge when towing, because you have to use that with the infrastructure. Then you're trying to haul this big ass truck and trailer in these tiny little Walmart parking lots, pissing the entire population off of that city. And it's just not fun towing with an EV. I would never recommend someone to tow with an electric truck on a road trip today. And this completely solves that problem.
And you say this from experience, because you've towed, like, was it your Leaf from Colorado, North Colorado, all the way to San Diego or something?
Yeah, but I also towed to Washington, and I've towed to the East Coast. I've done
right. You've done a lot of towing, is what I'm saying.
15,000 miles towing with my Rivian. Yeah,
right. You have as much experience with towing with the EVs as probably anybody. Hey, Francie, we need to hear about your opinion about this thing too.
Can you hear me?
Say it again.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes, perfect.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you. Hi, everyone, also. And you're talking about like long-range hauling, right? But I think this would also be really helpful for instance, anecdotally, but I've talked to a lot of like conservation effort groups that need to tow things like locally around their rivers or whatever, but they've wanted to go EV, but they haven't been able to because, of course, that's aligned with their mission because they just can't do the range. They still have to go far, but it sounds like this would be a great use case for them as well.
Right on. Okay.
Yeah, I think really the use case is if you're not towing, this doesn't make sense. If you are going to tow for any bit of distance, this is the only option at the moment in an electric truck.
Right. And when you do run out, the refill is fast. You know, you just go to the gas station, you fill up. All the gas stations are pull through, so you don't have to worry about, you know, undoing your trailer or whatever, and you just keep on going. You know,
yeah, it's the future. You fill up in 4 minutes. It's crazy.
Right. Power of Light makes a point here. I would like to see a bed mount range extender with a charge port in the bed that can integrate range extender, ICE battery, or trailer integrated battery. Integration of batteries and trailers is also a good development. Interesting. We've seen that with some RV trailers actually now. That what was that? Oh, there's two, right? There was one.
There's Lightship.
Lightship, and then there was one more recently, another one.
Yes.
You have a thumb on your face for some reason there. Okay, it's gone.
Oh, when you do this, it does that sometimes.
Oh, really?
Why? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There you go.
I think that's Martin. Hey, thank you, Kayvon, for that donation. All right. So, I don't know. So, this comes out, I guess it's a 2025 model. It sounds like it might come out early 2025, and I'm not sure if it's going to get here next year. I don't know. You hear anything about that?
No, we're going to talk to them at the LA Auto Show, so we'll be there. And so we're going to hopefully check it out. I hope it's there. This to me, look, I know we're trying to move away from gas. You can't just flip the switch for every use case. I drive electric every day. I push electric cars harder than even I want to sometimes, especially from the towing side. It's just not feasible today. Certainly a Silverado is the best use case for towing, but then you're putting 240 kilowatt hours worth of batteries in your truck, and you still have the charging port in the most inconvenient place for towing with that vehicle. It's a pain in the ass no matter which way you do it. This means you can drive electric 99% of the time, but when you need a truck for truck stuff, you can still do it. And yeah, you're burning some fuel, but honestly, this is amazing. Volts are a very interesting range extended EV concept as well. Actually, I'm trying to convince my dad to buy a Volt. It's a car we've never covered on our channel, but I think that drivetrain and that logic is way ahead of its time and would work perfectly for a Silverado or a truck or a van or an RV or something like this.
You're frozen up there again. I'm not sure what's going on.
It's infrastructure. Sorry.
It's okay. It's about 15 seconds, basically.
You get the idea. We love it.
Yeah. All right. We can move on. Actually, Martin, did you have anything you wanted to say about that?
Oh, these guys nailed it with use case. We don't have to solve all use cases with all vehicles. And this is a specific use case, I think, so that you don't end up with a compromise vehicle. Because we still have a diesel Golf, as well as two EVs. I'm not Mr. EV hitting you over the head saying you must drive an electric vehicle. We do because we have solar panels and because I prefer them. And I really dislike getting back into our diesel if we ever drive it. But I'm not going to tell anyone they can't drive a diesel, because if we electrify 95% of the roads and the travel, think about how clean our air is going to be. Think about how much money we're going to save. Think about the vehicles that we drive. Like, this is going to be fascinating how they manage the torque and the demand on these electric motors. In theory, whether you're hauling or not hauling, you should have a very similar experience in this truck. Whereas think about when you hook up a big trailer in a combustion car, you feel the weight immediately. And you know, the engine's working harder. Get the software right on this and you'll never know you're towing. There's loads of benefits to this. And again, as Tom says, it wouldn't be for me. Plug-in hybrids aren't for me. If people charge this at home and drive around day to day on electric, they may never use the petrol engine. In which case you might ask them, if you're going on a road trip twice a year where you're hauling or something, why don't you just hire a truck? Right. And that's a good question to ask. But people like to own stuff, and that's their business. And I'm not going to tell people how to live their lives. So it's a very, very interesting concept. I don't know if it's the perfect combination or the worst of bringing two things together. But it depends on price as well, because if you're a fleet, you're not going to buy this if you're a fleet. If your use case is 100 miles a day or work trucks, or you're not towing, because it is going to be expensive. Right. So yeah, it's all about use case, and it's not about saying, well, this is how I use an electric vehicle, therefore I must impose that on the rest of the world. So I think let's be understanding. Oh, I want to address how they marketed it, which was stupid. I do have an opinion on that. Calling it unlimited battery range, that's just daft. That's a chief marketing officer who spent 6 months in focus groups telling the CEO, here's the line that you're saying, because this is going to land with our audience. Stupid, daft, ridiculous. They should never say that word again. Unlimited battery range. Idiotic comment, because I hate it when companies and corporations treat me like a fool. I'm not spending my money with companies that think I'm some kind of idiot. Of course it hasn't got unlimited battery range. You either charge it or you put petrol inside it. Either way, I don't care. It's going to be great. Also ending off by saying you never have to charge this thing. I'm like, my issue with Toyota is not that they don't want to make EVs. That's fair play. Everyone can do their thing. It's the amount of money they spend on anti-EV propaganda. Because I'm like, don't tell me I'm wrong. Just like, leave me alone, Toyota. And so I hope that Ram don't go down the marketing avenue of charging's bad. This is the best solution. Just say, this is one solution. Like, this is, we're going to make all electric trucks, the Ram Rev 1500. We're going to make this. We'll make combustion cars, trucks all the time. You choose. Like, you're intelligent. You're an intelligent consumer. We'll give you all the information you pick. So I didn't like that. I hope that's the last time they ever use that kind of unlimited range thing. Because I'm like, nah, don't treat me like a mug. No one believes it. Stupid line to use. And I think it diminished what was a brilliant product launch. It was a really, really good truck. So, and of course, we'll never get them here because we haven't got truck culture.
Right. Or roads wide enough to handle them.
Yeah, there's a few imported F-150s and they don't fit.
So while we're talking about different tech for the transition, this was not a part of the show, but I think it could be interesting. Okay. Francie drove and did a whole bunch of stuff with BMW on their hydrogen programs.
Okay.
So maybe you can share what that was like.
Right. So definitely a different kind of powering your vehicle that is a bit controversial. But yeah, BMW is exploring the technology of how to have hydrogen powered EVs. So they had one immediately after driving ICE and EV cars, and essentially it felt great. It felt like an EV. I want to say that it felt different because it's powered differently, but not really It really isn't, but that's kind of nice. So it's familiar. Of course, there's the question of if that is the right use case for hydrogen, the individual car, or if we should go bigger scale or whatever it is. But there seems to be an argument there as well, that there's a balance between EV and hydrogen that, of course, like I'll dive into on the Out of Spec podcast and stuff. But it was pretty cool. They had them there for you to really try and experience that it's possible, and also had a great presentation on the background that BMW is doing with this research and why they're doing it and how they're doing it. And it'll be interesting to see. They apparently are going to go forward with it. They're going to start small and then just keep expanding like a little pyramid with the models that they are interested in. So it'll be cool to see what happens. But I think, yeah, a lot of people have a lot of opinions on hydrogen.
My thing is, I think it's dumb. We had dinner with the head of the BMW hydrogen team, and obviously it was an interesting dinner because I feel one way, he feels very differently. But my main point to him was, I'm not against hydrogen. Some of our most popular videos, some of my biggest interests are with hydrogen. Some of you guys may know we have a hydrogen fueling station at our office, and I want to get that turned on and buy a Mirai and live with one and just be on a leash to the office. I think it'd be really fun. But the thing is, the infrastructure just isn't there right now. We've already been building out the EV infrastructure, and we're so far ahead. So my point to BMW was, look at what Tesla did with the supercharger network. They believed in electric, and they built out the network, and now you're using a competitor's charging network. If you really believe in hydrogen, just build out your own damn network and make it work. And if you want to, you know, then you can let other OEs use it. I'm like, until you put in a huge investment to actually make this work, we're just talking about hypotheticals that likely won't happen at this point.
Right. And just to underline that, I would suggest people go read this article, like just Google it, Liebreich, the unbearable lightness of hydrogen. It's just, he is not a believer in hydrogen having a future in the light vehicle transport, and even possibly the heavy vehicle transport. Anyway, it's some really great articles. It's really long, really great points, and it's definitely worth spending some time on. At least, even if you're in favor of hydrogen, just the, you know, see what the people are making, the arguments people make against it.
But then also watch, we have a podcast, we filmed his presentation. So get both sides of the equation.
Yeah, definitely.
You can see a very pro hydrogen thing on Out of Spec podcast coming. I think it's important that we don't just shut it down. You know, my impression right now is it's dumb right now, but I do like the idea of it for aerospace. I like the idea of it for class 8 semi use. I like the idea of it for construction equipment. Yeah, you can't store it without losses for a long period of time, but are there ways that we can improve that? Like, I'm not against hydrogen. I just think it's definitely like, there's a few people who are like, it's hydrogen or nothing. And BMW is definitely not saying that. They're saying it's a mix of all these things. But yeah, I just thought it was really funny to have dinner with that dude. And I learned a lot. It was really great.
Yeah.
Are they still buying in Toyota's stuff? Or are they doing their own now? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So the fuel cells are from Toyota, but BMW assembles the entire stack. Is that how it's called? And then they also do their, it's a BMW motor, BMW battery. The only thing that comes from Toyota is just the cells themselves. And they passed one around. I got to hold one. It was really cool. Never seen anything like it before.
Very cool.
Yeah. We talked a lot about how, you know, their engineering team who built the iX5 hydrogen was there, and talked a lot about NVH and performance and sustained performance, because it only has a 2 kilowatt hour battery pack, but it can sit at top speed all day in Germany. Like, they only built 100, but they took the time to use it and treat it as a series production model. And they are unbelievably well tuned. And for a hydrogen, it's by far the best hydrogen vehicle on the market.
Rivian was in the news this week. It reported its third quarter earnings and outlook, and it was all pretty positive. It lost less money than expected. It says it's going to may produce 54,000 vehicles this year, which is 4,000 more than it was saying it would. And while that's all great, the news that we really liked, or I really liked this week, is that Rivian is ending its exclusivity arrangement with Amazon and will now take orders for its electric delivery vans from other companies around the world. Around the world, I said. They've just stuck that phrase in there. So I'm thinking, oh, I didn't. So maybe also going to do some international expansion at this point. But so Rivian offers two sizes, the Delivery 500, which starts this, I believe, at $83,000, and the Delivery 700, which I found a graphic is $87,000. So $4,000 split. And I believe the bigger one is like 7.5 inch longer than the shorter one. And they're, you know, they're both pretty, there's a lot of volume inside. RJ Scringe says Amazon is and will remain a key partner for us, and we look forward to continuing to work closely with the Amazon team as we help them to achieve their climate pledge goal. So just throwing that out there to let us know that, you know, it's not ending with Amazon. They still have that deal in place. They're still partners, but you know, they're going to be selling it to other people. So Kyle, besides these vans going to companies that will use it for what it's specifically designed for, delivering packages, there is a possibility, maybe a slim one, that it could be also upfitted as an RV, but with a range of only 201 miles. I think the ones in the Amazon fleet are software limited to 150 miles. But 200 miles, is that too low a range for an RV upfitter to take a chance on this as a platform?
Yes. No, the thing is, a range extender works great. I mean, they're going to be, you know, if it's EPA rated at 200 miles, you're getting, because right. I think they use the LFP standard range batteries in these things. So it has the Chinese battery in it. At least that's what the Amazon ones have.
I saw the graphic I looked at, I think it said MCM batteries in.
Oh, so maybe they're putting a large pack. So the Amazon ones, every one that was built since January of this year uses the LFP small battery. Okay. But maybe for the consumer ones, they're not putting that battery in there. I don't know. We have to ask them. But either way, I think certainly for some people who like, you know, when you have your house with you, who cares how long it takes to stop and charge? But people also use RVs to get places. Right. And, you know, a lot of RVers cover huge distance in, you know, really windy conditions through the middle of the country. So your 200 mile range turns into 100 effective, and you're just pushing a brick of air across. And yeah, it's just not enough for most RVers. Even right. My Sprinter range, I have a diesel Sprinter, which would be, you know, hopefully I'm looking to replace that with an electric solution or a range extended solution at some point. And I think I get maybe 280 miles on a full tank of diesel, roughly. And even that feels a bit annoyingly low.
Right. I'm not sure there's going to be anything better than that for a while, though, because like the biggest, well, the BrightDrop van is the only other one I can think of off the top of my head that, no, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, it's just like the Rivian van is so much cooler looking than the BrightDrop
van. It's cooler looking, sure. But I mean, if you do it up as an RV and have like, I was going to say like a paint scheme or a wrap or something, kind of deal with some of the styling issues, you know? It's like the BrightDrop vans look kind of commercial. Maybe, they're not very warm and fuzzy. The Rivian van is friendly with the round lights, you know, it's got that friendly face.
Certainly people will outfit them. It could be an interesting series for us to do that, to buy one, to upfit it and see what it's like as an RV and send Francie around the world in that thing. And it could be really fun. So yeah, it's definitely doable. It's possible. It's not for everyone. It could be for a select few who are EV nerds. I've seen a lot of upfitters that do thousands of trucks.
Well, they're not going to do like one or two vehicles.
Yes, you're,
you know,
totally
one or two
right.
RVs. They're going to do like dozens, maybe hundreds, you know.
Absolutely.
Right. So if there's not like an addressable market for like an RV with 200 miles of range, it's likely not going to happen. I mean, if like, because an RV upfitter is not going to buy like six of them and, you know, put them out there as a model, right? They want to be able to have hundreds.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we'll see enough. There's enough use cases for the vans out there to keep them in production and for them to be going everywhere. In many places we probably can't even think of at the moment. But there's enough demand for this type of thing. I just don't think RVing is it.
Jordan was just that pollster day, which I kind of wish we could have been able to talk about a bit. But they had, I guess they had a few food trucks there spewing diesel. I heard actually food trucks are getting into batteries now. Like a lot of them are adopting batteries as a power source. So they don't have that generator behind them all day, like, you know, making fumes and noises and everything. But so real quick, we're almost out of time. I wanted to get to one last thing. Oh, Lucid, they were also in the news this week, and they also reported their third quarter earnings, which it's just that they weren't as rosy as Rivian's. So while its recent financial results are pretty terrible, and investors and fans of the brands may have some reason to hope for positive change, the company has created a new executive role of chief operating officer and hired a gentleman named Mark Winterhoff to fill it. Obviously, it's too soon to know whether he can turn around their fortunes, but he's joining the company just before they unveil or debut their second product, the Gravity SUV. That's going to come out this week, I believe, probably at the LA Auto Show, I would imagine, because that's happening. We'll be talking about that on the next week's show. A lot of LA Auto Show action. That's going to be a pretty good show, I think. Right. And they also, as Martin mentioned earlier in the show, that they adopted NACS, the North American charging standard from Tesla, this week. So any quick thoughts on that? The CEO, I mean, you've met the, you've talked to the Lucid team at all. Do you think that's what they need? Like a chief operating officer, somebody to kind of herd the cats and get them moving in a better direction?
You know, I'm not a good company analyst, so I don't know. I don't know what kind of situation the company's in. I'll say they built an incredible car. You know, it's probably the best driving EV, if not one of the best driving EVs somewhere around there on the market. They have a great product. My opinion is it just needs a little bit better software. It needs a better infrastructure to support that vehicle. And, you know, as someone, I think I've probably done more miles in Lucid than most owners, most anyone. And so really know this car extremely well. And they have a great product. It needs some fine tunings, which is not unusual for a first brand. For my opinion, the Gravity, this the whole future of the company rests on the Gravity, at least from a product standpoint. They mm-hmm. learned what people liked and didn't like from the Air. The Gravity is, you know, so important to the brand and its future. And, you know, I mentioned when I went to Lucid recently, I saw, I don't even know, 50 or 100 of them all being worked on and, you know, prepared for testing miles, final validation, all of those things. And I can't wait to see it uncovered. I have not seen an uncovered Gravity yet, but I know the team put a lot of effort into it. In terms of the company's financial situation, I just don't know enough to comment.
Right. Somebody asked me about it this week on Threads, and I said...
Everyone tells me it's bad, but I don't know what to believe.
Oh, sorry, I missed that last 10 seconds. You were frozen. What were telling you was bad?
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
What was bad?
Oh, everyone tells me the company's financial position is terrible. But again, I feel like those are people that inherently are almost against Lucid. So I don't know what to believe or what not to believe. That's not my world. I review cars, not companies.
Sure. So I was just saying, somebody asked me about the company, what was my take on Lucid this week? And so I said, they've got great, they have a great mechanical product. It's kind of let down by its software. And I think at this point, it's pretty clear that they need some upper management changes. And then I learned about this new CEO position opening up like the next day. So it's like, oh, okay. I think it's pretty positive news, actually. I mean, there's at least a chance that we have to wait to see what this... I mean, they have a good lifeline, but they're being backed by the Saudi fund, the PIF fund. They have some leash, they have some runway still, but they really... Do they really need to turn their fortunes around? Definitely. And the Gravity could be the vehicle that does it. And they've gone through a lot of teething problems with the Air, with the sedan. And so I'm really hoping that the Gravity kind of comes out with its software much improved over how the Air launched anyway.
Well, the Air launched with really bad software, but we do have to give them some credit where they issued a ton of software updates. I know they mm-hmm. took a lot of our feedback in shaping the software. It still isn't perfect. Again, I haven't driven the car in the last couple months, so there's been some time gap since I've last been in them. I've heard of even more software updates since then, but the fact that the driver assistance doesn't even do lane changes and all these little things, it's like, okay, you just got to get all that stuff dialed in. And now that, of course, with the NACS support is great, I'm really curious how they're going to plan to do their booster in the vehicle. When I was there, we were talking about a few different options they had. I don't know which they decided to go with to do more than, you know, 43 or 45 kilowatts on a version 3 or version 3 supercharger. They now, of course, have vehicle-to-vehicle charging. It's actually using the mobile connector. It's just a J1772 plug on the input side, rather than like a NEMA 1450 outlet or something. I love how they're charging a Model S in this photo.
Right. It's a little cheeky. After the same week that they adopted the Tesla North American charging standard, they do this vehicle-to-vehicle charging announcement and charge a Tesla with it.
And it's a Model S with broken door handles. You can see only the front door handle is popped out and the rear one is in.
Oh. I hadn't noticed that. Good eye.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, look, I love it. I love the sense of competition. You can't just have one company doing it all. I mean, and I really hope Lucid and Tesla get into this little technical rivalry in the future. Of course, it sounds like Lucid has some stuff they need to sort out from a company perspective. But once they're hopefully all sorted, this Lucid versus Tesla versus the Germans versus the Chinese in the EV space, I mean, what a time to be alive. It's crazy.
Right. Right. Hey, Francie, have you spent much time looking at the Lucid situation? I was just wondering if you have any thoughts about the CEO position.
I think reinvesting into investing more into the leadership can be a good sign, but you never know what comes next. It could also be tumultuous, but hopefully I don't know his background, of course, so don't know exactly what he's bringing to Lucid. But yeah, I think a lot of what they need to do is make sure that their offering is even more and more obvious to consumers if they're going to compete and bring those numbers back up. I mean, it's a difficult space to be in. There's potential there, as we've seen. I think the competition is great. Like you said, dialing in more of the things that they need to really just be clear as the clear option, like when there's other brands that have that loyalty already who are introducing EVs. So I think they're in a difficult position. And we'll have to see. And they face a lot of doubt. But I think this could be a good sign. But like we've all said, we're just not sure what this guy will bring along or exactly what that is a flag indicating here.
Right. Well, speaking of flag and indicating, Kyle, so the Batteries Included podcast has this other new series called Battery Bargains. We're doing this usually on Monday mornings where we take emails from real viewers and try to match them up with a vehicle that's electric vehicle that's right for their situation. And we use we use cars.com. It's not a sponsor a lot, but we use, you know, cars.com to look up vehicles and stuff. And this week we noticed that Tesla is selling new cars on cars.com now. They weren't there before. There was like a few thousand like brand new Teslas on the site. And does that surprise you at all? Or? Is that, are they pulling like a lever of some kind?
Yeah, they got inventory. Tell people they got inventory.
Some more cars.
Okay. I mean, they have their own inventory site. I just thought it was it was odd to see them on like this after not being on cars.com, you know, with their new inventory, because they don't sell through dealers. You know, dealers go on there and they have, you know, all kinds of new vehicles from all the automakers on there. But Tesla was one that wasn't there. We had to open up a separate, you know, the Tesla website to get the pricing on those things when we're talking.
I think you'll see the last 8 weeks of the year, tons of every lever these companies can pull. Quarter four is probably going to be pretty weak, is my guess, across the industry for electric cars, because if you just wait another 8 weeks, cash on the hood, $7,500.
But maybe some cars are losing their, like I heard the Mustang Mach-E might be losing some of that cash, some of the incentive. I'm not sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so it's, I'm sure, very vehicle specific. Yes. But I think, my impression is most people are waiting till next year. I mean, a friend of mine who's borrowing my Model 3 is driving it just so she can buy a car January 1st.
Okay. Oh, yep. There you go. So anecdotally, that seems to be the case. At least. All right. I don't know. Just about out of here. Martin, got anything you want to share?
Yeah, I finally found the graphic that I promised I'd find, John. So I'm so sorry. That took like an hour. I totally forgot where I found it. So it's an X account by a chap called Richard Smith. who is in his bio says Samsung, Tesla, Lambo, Gravity Falls, Rick and Morty, Futurama. So he's okay with me. And he says that I can't find it on his actual profile, but it is, I think, on his Twitter account. He's made this graphic. It's certainly his, you know, his at thing down here. And thank you, Richard, for doing that, just to keep us all, you know, informed. So yeah, John and everyone that wanted this, that's his X account. If you want to go and have a look and follow him, and that's where I found this and I showed it in the video at the start to just to visually see who's in, who's out. It's, yeah, some big names there that haven't jumped in, but they will. We know they will. It's just when and how do they spin it that they waited so long? You know, the likes of the Ferraris and the VinFasts and the McLarens don't matter. So the ones down here, that's fine. But it's these two big groups. And so, and actually, those are the two biggest groups in Europe. So if you look at EV sales in Europe, VW lead the way with about 20%. And Stellantis is on about 15% of the EV market over here. And then you've got Tesla and BMW a bit closer down towards the 10s. Actually, maybe Tesla's about 13% over this summer and BMW's around 10% of the EV market. So, yeah, those are the two big groups that sell loads of cars with CCS2 plugs on the side. And they're in no hurry to announce snacks. But and also what I thought was interesting was Elon Musk went on a bit of a... what's the best word? I mean, there's no, I think there's some bad blood between Peter Rawlinson and Elon Musk.
Sure.
And so when Lucid made the announcement, Elon was on X, you know, if you want to use the word gloating, but certainly laying into Lucid in a way that, again, if I worked at a competitor car company, I'd think, oh man, do I need to kind of get in bed with Elon Musk? And so at some point I would, if I was VW and Stellantis, drip the news out. Don't bait him. Don't get any negative publicity. Just say, hey guys, we're doing it too. And, you know, do the deals in the back rooms because, yeah, he's so, you know, so powerful and so influential and, you know, you don't want to be on the wrong side of him. So there you go.
Mark Norman generously donated us $10, which thank you very much. And he says, sorry to plug another show, but the latest Engineering Explained featuring the two Jasons is amazing fun with the Lucid Air Sapphire.
Yeah, this is awesome. It was an accidental video because they were both at the same thing at the same time. And go and watch it. It's brilliant.
Who's the other Jason? I know Jason Fenske. He's great. Yeah. And Engineering Explained is... Sorry?
Jason Kamisa.
Oh, that's... Could be good. Jason Kamisa makes incredible videos for... Who does he make the videos for?
Haggerty.
Haggerty, that's right. Yeah, yeah, he's very good at what he does. Yeah, that'd be great to see that. I need to see that myself then.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. It's flagged. I have it saved.
I got so many videos saved. It's ridiculous. My watch later list just gets longer and longer and longer on YouTube. And I'm like...
Yeah, I was lucky to spend some time with Jason in Vietnam, actually, just chatting a little bit. We didn't spend that much time together, but I did get a chance to finally see him. I'd watched his videos for years, and I was kind of a fan. And then I see him coming through the airport. I was like, oh, very excited. Anyway, all right. So I guess we should probably call it. We're over our time. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us, and thank you for your very generous donations this week. That's great to see. And wow. I guess we'll see about getting a Patreon set up as well. Right. So we'll see you all again very soon. Thanks for joining us, and ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.